Could you please sing with me to the passage we read in the book of Exodus in chapter 18. Exodus chapter 18, and looking again at verses 17 and 18. Exodus 18, verses 17 and 18. Moses' father-in-law said to him, "What you are doing is not good. You and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out, for the thing is too heavy for you. You are not able to do it alone." You are not able to do it alone. We're continuing our series this evening on essentials for the church, which is based on Exodus 17 and 18. And so far we have noted that a healthy church needs the power of God. Chapter 17, verses 8 through to 16. A healthy church needs the power of God. And then we saw that a healthy church needs to be proclaiming the gospel, sharing the gospel. Chapter 18, verses 1 to 12. And this week we're focusing on the third essential element for a healthy church. That's in chapter 18, verses 13 to 27. What we're focusing on is a healthy church needs to be sharing out the work. A healthy church needs to be laboring together. A healthy church needs partnership in the gospel. Now there's two things I want to draw out from you, from this passage with you. The problem Jethro sees, verses 13 to 18, and then the proposal Jethro offers in verses 19 through to 27. The problem Jethro sees and the proposal Jethro offers. First, the problem Jethro sees, verses 13 to 18. And what we see is that Jethro sees that his son-in-law is on the verge of burnout. Jethro sees that his son-in-law is on the verge of burnout. Let's consider the actions he sees. Verse 13. The next day Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood around Moses from morning till evening. Now you remember, Moses hasn't seen his father-in-law or his wife or his two sons for a long time. But there is so much to do that the very next day we're told he's back at work. The family reunion is put on hold. And Moses is found, we're told, sitting among the people as they bring their complaints and their questions and their criticisms and their worries and their concerns and their problems to Moses to deal with. And we're told that there are so many people coming that Moses is sitting listening to them from morning until evening, and they're sitting around Moses or standing around Moses from morning till evening. And Jethro sees this, and he asks the question, verse 14. When Moses' father-in-law saw all that he was doing for the people, he said, "What is this that you are doing for the people? Why do you alone sit as judge, and all the people stand around you from morning till evening?" Jethro asks Moses two key questions. What is this that you are doing for the people? And why do you alone sit as judge, and all the people stand around you from morning till evening? Jethro is effectively asking Moses, what on earth do you think you're doing? What are you playing at, Moses? Now listen to the answer Jethro hears, verses 15 and 16. Moses said to his father-in-law, "Because the people come to me to inquire of God, when they have a dispute, they come to me, and I decide between one person and another, and I make them know the statutes of God and his laws." Moses knows all of this is a mess. He knows that his father-in-law is right to question him and query him. But Moses has reached that point in his thinking where he thinks this is the only way it can be done. There's no plan B. There's no alternative. This is the only working model as far as Moses is concerned. Moses has gotten himself to the point of thinking that he is indispensable to the people and work of God. He is functioning as a prophet as he brings the Lord's word to the people. He's functioning as a priest as he prays for the Lord's blessing to be upon the people. And he's functioning as a king as he brings the Lord's rule to bear on the people. And he's saying to Jethro, they need me. And they cannot function without me. They cannot cope without me. I need to work at this 100-mile-hour pace. Sadly, Moses has forgotten, as many others tend to forget, that the only person who is indispensable when it comes to God's work is God himself. That is the only person who is indispensable. And this brings us to the assessment Jethro gives, verses 17 and 18. Moses' father-in-law said to him, "What you are doing is not good. You and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out, for the thing is too heavy for you. You are not able to do it alone." Jethro passes judgment on what Moses is doing, and he speaks directly. He speaks plainly. He doesn't waver, doesn't compromise in what he's saying, doesn't address it in a grey way. It's black and white as far as Jethro is concerned. He tells Moses straight out that he strongly disapproves of what Moses is doing. "What you are doing," he says, "is not good." And Jethro tells Moses that he disapproves of what Moses is doing because of the impact it will have on Moses. "You'll wear yourself out. The work is too heavy for you. You cannot handle the work alone." Quite simply, Jethro is saying to Moses, "You're going to burn yourself out." But Jethro also tells Moses that he disapproves of what Moses is doing because of the impact it will have on the people. It will burn the people out. They'll become worn out and weary as they stand all day waiting for their cases to be heard, and they will become worn out and weary as they fail to receive adequate pastoral care, pastoral attention from Moses. Jethro sees that his son-in-law is on the verge of burnout. Now, as I was preparing this sermon, I read up a little on burnout within the ministry, and I noted the following statistics. 25% of ministers' wives, doesn't apply in this case, but 25% of ministers' wives see their husband's work schedule as a source of conflict. Now remember, Jethro has just brought Zipporah and Moses' two sons to Moses. Perhaps he's as concerned for his daughter and his two grandsons as he is for his son-in-law. 33% of ministers claim the ministry is an outright hazard to their family. 45% of ministers say they've experienced depression or burnout to the extent they've had to take a leave from ministry. 57% of ministers say that they would go to some other vocation if they possibly could. 75% of ministers have reported severe stress causing anguish, worry, bewilderment, anger, depression, fear, and alienation. And 1,500 ministers leave the ministry every month due to burnout. 1,500 ministers giving up the calling God has placed in their lives because of burnout every month. And having read those statistics, I then read up on what's causing all of this. And here's how one minister put it. "The modern preacher has to make as many visits as a country doctor, shake as many hands as a politician, prepare as many briefs as a lawyer, see as many people as a specialist. He has to be as good an executive as the president of a university, as good a financier as a bank president, and in the midst of it all, he has to be so good a diplomat that he could umpire a baseball game between Knights of Columbus, who are a black baseball team, and the Ku Klux Klan." Now, this sermon is not me confessing to being burnt out. And it's not me confessing that I'm feeling burnt out. You have been remarkably generous to me as a congregation ever since I came. There's been so many people here coming saying, are you doing okay here? You're not doing too much. Make sure you're taking time off. You are a fantastic congregation at looking after your minister. So thank you. But it could happen. Because we are all finite and we are all human. And it is more than possible that there is someone in this room tonight who is burnt out in the service of God. Or on the verge of burnout in the service of God. There's an old proverb that says, "All lay loads on a willing horse." And that tends to happen so often in churches where you find that a few people are doing anything and everything either through choice or through circumstance. There's the woman who teaches the Sunday school, leads the Bible study, cleans the church, helps with the teas, runs the youth group, visits the elderly, and juggles the busy home life as well. There's the elder who does the singing, looks after the money, runs outreach events, leads services, never misses a midweek meeting, goes to all the meetings that elders are meant to do at a local level, presbytery level, denominational level, does his door duty and works from 8 a.m. till 6 p.m. Monday through till Friday. I've known people like that. And they're wonderful people. And I love them for their zeal. I love them for their commitment. I love them for their enthusiasm. But friends, they're going to burn out. And sometimes we just have to take stock and we have to remind ourselves that we are not indispensable. We are only human when it comes to God and when it comes to God's work. Sometimes we think we have to know everything for everyone. Only God is all-knowing. Sometimes we think we have to fix everything for everyone. Only God is all-powerful. Sometimes we think we have to be everywhere for everyone. Only God is all-present. God is the one who is indispensable. No human is. And so I want to encourage you this evening in two ways. I want to encourage you by saying it's not wrong to say no. Even Jesus said no. It is wrong to say no all the time when it comes to gospel work. Church life is about participation, and every one of you has a key role to play within the life of this church. But it's not wrong to say no when you're already laboring and heavy laden. Your salvation does not depend on your performance. Your place in God's kingdom does not depend on your hard work. It is through Jesus alone that you are loved by God. It's through Jesus alone you're accepted by God. It's through Jesus alone you are forgiven by God. It is not wrong to say no. And if you are laboring, if you are heavy laden, if you are in need of rest, and you have someone saying, "Can you do this for me?" Don't feel guilt-tripped into doing it. It's not wrong to say no. And I also want to encourage you this evening to look out for those who are burnt out or on the verge of burning out. You see, I think people are often slow to see that they're burning out until it's too late. And they need people like Jethro to step into their lives and say, "Stop. You're doing too much." And it may be over the coming weeks or months, you might have to come up to someone within the congregation and you might have to just say to them, "Stop, enough, what you're doing is not good, you're doing too much, you're going to burn out." You might need to be a Jethro to someone. So that's the problem Jethro sees. This brings us, secondly, to the proposal Jethro offers. Proposal Jethro offers, verses 19 to 27. What we see is that Jethro offers his son-in-law a solution to his potential burnout. Jethro offers his son-in-law a solution to his potential burnout. Jethro tells Moses to listen to him in verse 19. He says, "Now obey my voice," or "Listen to me. I will give you advice, and God be with you." Now, I know that I've spoken to the younger ones about One Direction. I can't stand One Direction, and I really can't stand Little Mix. But I do love the rock band U2. And U2 have a song called "Every Breaking Wave," where they sing, "It's hard to listen when you preach." And perhaps that's Moses. He's been preaching for so long that he no longer has the time or the ability to listen to people who are speaking to him about how he is doing. And so Jethro firmly looks him in the eye and says, "Listen to me, Moses. Take it on board. Obey what I'm saying." And Jethro tells Moses what his role should be. Verses 19 and 20. He says, "You shall represent the people before God and bring their cases to God. And you shall warn him about the statutes and the laws, and make them know the way in which they must walk, and what they must do." Moses is to take the Lord to the people in teaching, and he is to take the people to the Lord in prayer. This is the ministry Moses is called to. A ministry of prayer and a ministry of preaching. And just before Moses can complain and say, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, Jethro, you've gone too far," this is unworkable, Jethro tells Moses to appoint others to help him. Verses 21 and 22. Moreover, look for able men from all the people, men who fear God, who are trustworthy and hate a bribe, and place such men over the people as chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. And let them judge the people at all times. Every small matter they shall bring to you, but any small matter they shall decide themselves. So it will be easier for you, and they will bear the burden with you. They will bear the burden with you. Now let's just consider some aspects of these men. These men were to have a good relationship with the Lord. They were to fear God. They were to see serving God as a serious business, whether it was in big tasks or small tasks. Nothing was too small for them when it came to God's work. Life was about the worship of God as far as these men were concerned. Not only that, these men were to have a good relationship with others. They were to be trustworthy men who hated dishonest gain. In other words, they weren't to be in the ministry for the money. They weren't to be in the ministry for the power, the position, the prestige. They were to be respected by others as men of integrity who loved God. Not only that, these men were to be representative. They were to be chosen from among the people. You see, Moses couldn't just choose his best friends and family members to serve alongside him. It wasn't to be a nice in-club. It was to be men representing the people before God. And not only that, these men were to share in the work. Look at verses 21 and 22. And place such men over the people as chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. And let them judge the people at all times. Every great matter they shall bring to you, but any small matter they shall decide themselves. So it will be easier for you, and they will bear the burden with you. So here is Jethro, and he has a solution to Moses' burnout problem. An army general would call it divide and conquer. An economist would call it the division of labour. The Bible also has a word for it, and that word is Presbyterianism. The spiritual rule of God's people by representative elders, or presbyters, as the Greek word puts it. Jethro then goes on and he tells Moses about the consequences that will follow. Verse 23, if you do this, God will direct you, and you will be able to endure, and all his people also will go to their place in peace. Jethro says, do this, Moses, and you will survive. You will not burn out. And he says, do this, Moses, and the people around you will survive, and they will not burn out. They will go to their homes in peace. And look at the conclusion, verses 24 to 27. So Moses listened to the voice of his father-in-law, and did all that he had said. Moses chose able men out of all Israel and made them heads over the people, chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. And they judged the people at all times. Any hard case they brought to Moses, but any small matter they decided themselves. Then Moses let his father-in-law depart, and he went away to his own country. Now here is evidence of grace in the life of Moses. Here's evidence of God's hand on the life of Moses. I don't know, young people, do you like anybody telling you you're doing something wrong? Nobody likes being told that what they're doing is wrong. And nobody likes being told how they could be doing it better. I hate it. I hate it when someone says to me, you're doing this wrong. And I hate it even more when someone says, here's how you could do it a little better. But the Lord gives Moses the grace to see that what he's doing is wrong. And the Lord gives Moses the grace to listen to the advice Jethro offers. And the Lord gives Moses the grace to implement those changes. So Jethro offers his son-in-law a solution to his potential burnout problem. Now today, friends, the Bible teaches that Jesus alone is the perfect prophet, he's the perfect priest, he's the perfect king. And Jesus, unlike Moses, will never burn out. He doesn't get tired. Jesus is the one who has borne the full weight of our sin. And now Jesus is more than able of bearing the daily burden of our spiritual needs. You can take anything to Jesus. You can take anything to Jesus, and he will not be tired. He will not be exhausted. He will not say, oh no, there's so-and-so again. I'm so tired, and they're bringing yet another complaint, yet another query, yet another question to me. Jesus doesn't grow tired. He doesn't grow weak. He doesn't slumber. He doesn't sleep. We began the service this evening reminding ourselves of those truths. And this Jesus is head of the church. Not a priest, not a pope, not a bishop, not a minister, not an elder, not a deacon, not a church member. Jesus alone is head of the church. And this Jesus, who is head of the church, exercises his authority by his word and by his spirit. And tonight, Stornoway High Free Church is under the headship of King Jesus, who reigns. It's not about man, it's about him. And we are under his authority, the authority of the one who is supreme. But the Bible also teaches that this same Jesus has called certain men to provide biblical instruction and spiritual leadership for his people. There's the minister, the teaching elder, who, like Moses, brings the word of God to the people of God. But a minister cannot do all of this himself. No matter how old he is or young he is, or he will become overwhelmed and burnt out, which is bad for him, but even worse, it is deadly for the church. And so God in his grace has provided ruling elders who share in the spiritual care of the people of God. And we have 14 wonderful elders in this church who serve in this capacity of ruling elder and oversee the spiritual care of this congregation. And I want to encourage you this evening to follow the direction of these men. And I want to encourage you this evening to love these men and hold them in high regard. And pray for them, not because they're such wonderful men, but because they're God's gifts to this congregation, for the welfare of this congregation. And I want to encourage you this evening to approach these men, speak to these men, especially when you feel that your flame of love for Jesus and his gospel is flickering out. Go to these men. You've all got district elders. Go to them when you feel you're growing cold. But I want to go even further tonight with you. Because when it comes to God's work, it doesn't simply fall on a teaching elder or a ruling elder. The Bible teaches us that God calls all his people to service, and that God calls different people, whether they're as young as Murdo or as old as the oldest person in this room. God calls different people to different services. If you come to this church, and especially if you come regularly to this church, you have a key role to play within the life of this congregation. And so let's consider some things that we do as a church, which you could involve yourself in. And as we go through these things, perhaps you'll feel your heart burning within you. And you'll know that this is the work that God has called you to do. The work of showing the greatness of Jesus Christ within this congregation. Perhaps God is calling you to help with welcoming the people to church on Sunday. Yes, we've got people on the door. But you can also be used in other ways of welcoming people to the services on Sunday. Perhaps God is calling you to help with the creche. Help with the Sunday school. Help with the youth work. Shaping young minds and young lives to know and love Jesus. So that the young people in this church will remember their Creator in the days of their youth. Perhaps God is calling you to help with the teas at the fellowships. And just as a quick aside, that is not just a job for the women. It is a job for everyone. Everyone can help with the teas after the services. Perhaps God is calling you to contribute articles to the newsletter, the Facebook group, the information sheet, the website, Letting people know about something that's encouraging you so that you can encourage others. Perhaps God is calling you to help with a Saturday setup. Helping out those who are labouring physically, maybe mentally, after a late night on a Friday to help with the setup on a Saturday morning. Perhaps God is calling you to visit the housebound, visit the hospitalised, visit the elderly, visit the vulnerable within the congregation. And just as an aside again, that can be something that the younger people could do. I'm sure it would really benefit some of the older, more housebound people in our congregation if they got a visit from someone in the congregation in their late teens or early 20s. Perhaps God is calling you to run a Bible study for your Christian friends or non-Christian friends. Perhaps God is calling you to organise and run something that this church isn't currently running. So you don't need to go to another church and say, well, that church is running this and I want to be part of that. But you could say, well, let's run it in this church. Every single one of us, without exception, is called to engage in some kind of Christian service. And every single one of us this evening, without exception, is called by God to pray and care. We are all called to pray for and care for the people within this church and point them to Jesus. You see, a healthy church, a God-glorifying church, a Spirit-filled church, a Word-driven church, a Christ-centered church is a church where those within it are serving one another and loving one another and caring for one another and praying for one another and bearing one another's burdens. It is an all-member ministry. It is a team effort. It is partnership in the gospel, as Paul tells the Philippians. It's all about working together to the glory of God. Now, over the last few weeks, we've considered the three essential elements for a healthy church. A healthy church needs the power of God. We need God. We all know that. And a healthy church needs to be proclaiming the gospel, sharing the gospel. And a healthy church needs to be sharing in that work of God together. So friends, let's seek by God's grace to have these characteristics at the heart of Stornoway High Free Church, where we're a church that are relying on the sovereign power of a God who is able when we are unable. Let's endeavour to be a healthy church where we're telling others of this glorious God, this glorious Saviour, this glorious gospel, this glorious grace, this glorious future. And let's seek to be working together as a church in this wonderful task of showing the greatness of Jesus Christ within our community and further afield. May we be a healthy church. Amen.